Mmm, the first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
This is Robbie Kelman Baxter, author of The Membership Economy, and you're listening to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast, helping you keep up with the smartest thinking in the quickly changing field of modern marketing. And now, here's your host, Douglas Burdett.
Hello, thanks for joining me on the Marketing Book Podcast. I'm your host, Douglas Burdett, and my goal in this podcast is to help you discover new ideas about what's working in modern marketing to help make you a more successful marketer. Don't worry about taking notes. I'm going to do that for you, and you can find them at marketingbookpodcast.com. Today, I'm joined by Robbie Kelman Baxter, author of The Membership Economy, Find Your Super Users, Master the Forever Transaction, and Build Recurring Revenue. And at the end of the show, I'll tell you how you can win a copy of her book. Robbie Kelman Baxter created the popular business term membership economy. She is the founder of Peninsula Strategies, a strategy consulting firm. Her clients have included large organizations like Netflix, SurveyMonkey, and Yahoo, as well as smaller venture-backed startups. Over the course of her career, Robbie has worked in or consulted to clients in more than 20 industries. Before starting Peninsula Strategies in 2001, Robbie served as a New York City Urban Fellow, a consultant at Booz Allen and Hamilton, and a Silicon Valley product marketer. Robbie has been quoted in or written articles for major media outlets, including CNN, Consumer Reports, The New York Times, and The Wall Street Journal. And she's obviously attracted to schools with extremely successful football programs. She graduated from Harvard and then earned an MBA from Stanford. Robbie, congratulations on the membership economy and welcome to the Marketing Book Podcast.
Oh, Douglas, thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
And I know that you didn't just go to those schools because of the football programs. So explain what is meant by the membership economy.
The membership economy is a major trend that is changing the way organizations across virtually every industry are connecting and providing benefits for their customers.
So why does it matter?
It matters because it's what customers want, which is ongoing relationships, a sense of belonging, being recognized for being unique and having unique needs. And it also meets the needs of the organizations who want loyalty, recurring revenue, and what we call a networked effect. That is that the more members belong, the more value each new member receives. So, you know, it starts to become something where the organization actually isn't providing all the value. A big portion of the value is being provided by the members themselves. Mm-hmm. Those things are really valuable. And so the reason I think the membership economy is so important for marketers is because it provides a new way to engage with customers that makes the customer happier and it makes the organization more successful at the same time.
Let's back up and tell us the story of what led to this book.
So I first fell in love with this concept that I'm now calling the membership economy about 11 years ago. I'll set the stage. I was working as an independent consultant. One of my big clients at the time was Netflix, and I just loved their business model. I had never really been involved with anything like it. I liked that they had a recurring revenue model. That is, they got paid every month for providing a benefit. I loved that it provided access as opposed to ownership. So in other words, you didn't have to collect a bunch of, at the time, DVDs and own the movies. You could actually just watch the movies that you wanted to watch without cluttering your living room and having the biggest possible variety. And I loved how the team at Netflix, especially the marketing team led by Leslie Kilgore at that time, used data to better understand the needs and wants of their members, and then constantly tinkered with the product in order to keep improving it and stay connected to their members. And, you know, from there, I really changed the trajectory of my career, and I focused on what I was calling at the time subscription businesses and then membership businesses. And, you know, eventually I had enough content and enough of a real understanding of how this applied across organizations that I was able to actually write a book.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned subscribers, and I think it's important that you explain the difference between subscribers and members.
Yeah, a subscription is a payment model, and a member is a person who belongs. So you can be a subscriber and feel no sense of belonging, and you can be a member and not pay a subscription fee.
An example of that would be?
You can be a member of Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't pay anything.
How is marketing being transformed by this membership model?
Well, the biggest things that are happening with marketing, I think, are when marketing needs to happen. So it used to be that you did marketing, and then there was a transaction, and then you were done. And now the transaction is actually the starting line for the relationship, not the finish line. Mm-hmm. And so marketers need to continue communicating with customers. And it's not just tech support or updates on new product releases. It's a real ongoing marketing kind of relationship where you're reminding them of the benefits, you're encouraging them to try new things, to engage in different and potentially bigger ways. And that's all the responsibility of marketing, which means that marketing is really about a relationship as opposed to driving someone through a funnel for a transaction.
Mm-hmm. And promoting.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, content marketing becomes much more important. Data analytics become much more important. And listening becomes much more important. Marketing, it's actually a two-way conversation where marketing is responding to input that they're getting from their members.
And what you're describing is also in part why I'm reading more articles about how in the future, more CEOs are going to be coming from marketing because of the expanded responsibilities of marketing in organizations like you're describing here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're going from Mad Men to Math Men in the world of marketing. And
I'm going to quote you on that.
It's not mine, actually. I think I saw it in something that SAP put out on marketing trends. But I loved that idea.
Yes, absolutely.
This idea that it's no longer about having the creative big idea. It's not about the Super Bowl ad, with marketing being this kind of crazy creative guy that's off in a corner. It's really about understanding the business model at its core and communicating and building products and services that actually meet the needs of the customer, which puts marketing at the center of the business.
Yeah, with a deep understanding of the customer, which I think a lot of companies still don't have. You know, it's more often than not, they don't know enough about their own customers. In fact, I think some of the best insights are coming from the sales folks because at least they're interacting with them towards the beginning.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So is this just for big companies or private sector? Who can this apply to?
Well, it's funny, Douglas, because when I started the book, you know, my last 11 years of consulting, probably the first 9 of those were really focused on what I call digital natives, venture-backed technology companies, mostly based in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. you know, the kinds of clients that I'd been working with. When I started writing the book and researching the book and talking about it, I got a lot of inquiries from Washington, D.C., from professional associations and nonprofits, really large-scale organizations that have been using a membership model for a long time, but really weren't leveraging technology to build those one-to-one relationships. And many of them weren't, like you said, they didn't really know who their members were. They hadn't really analyzed behavior. There's a lot of room there. And then small organizations have been coming to me in a couple of areas. You know, there's organizations, professional services providers who have very small businesses, you know, 1, 2, 5 partners who are creating a ton of free content to attract people to their community, allowing those people to communicate with one another, to educate each other, to support each other, and building this membership model around an individual or a small firm. So that's very exciting. And then I've seen just small businesses that are moving to membership models where they offer special deals for people. They recognize them for their loyalty. One great example that I just saw is I actually saw in People magazine. There's a dermatologist that has a Botox shop that's got a membership model.
Interesting.
And basically you sign up and you pay a monthly fee and you get to go to this lovely, lovely office, very comfortable, like a spa, and get your touch-ups and get to know the other members. And so it becomes this social place for, you know, and of course, all the people there are people who care about how they look. So they kind of relate to each other. And this is not a big business. This is a small, you know, one dermatologist shop. So membership is possible, you know, big and small, traditional organizations and, you know, both nonprofit and for-profit.
Please tell me the sign outside that practice doesn't say all you can eat Botox.
Hopefully they're not eating it.
Yes, that's true. That's true. What are some of the things that companies could possibly do terribly wrong as it relates to adopting the membership model?
Okay, so the first thing is organizations that are totally focused on the transaction, even though their financial model is a subscription. So I see a lot of companies where they're really focused on getting new customers in, but they don't really take care of them once they get them. Like I said, you know, the marketing can't stop there. The communications has to continue. You have to onboard them. You have to let them know about new benefits. You have to stay in touch. And a lot of organizations just, they're like, well, we'll get to that later. But right now we just need a lot of customers.
Yeah, I'm envisioning a very leaky bucket when you say that.
Totally. Leaky bucket is a huge problem. And, you know, why put water into your bucket before you've fixed the holes? It's just expensive and disappointing. The other thing that I see is organizations that just pull together a bunch of stuff and call it a membership. So they're not really thinking about what is it specifically that my members really need. They're saying, what can I give them that doesn't cost me a lot to give to them? And so it ends up being this hodgepodge of, you know, a discount for something, maybe a two-year-old piece of content that they created, access to some documents that no one ever reads, you know, things like that, you know, kind of this idea that more is more, when really what most people want is something simple and clean that solves their problem.
And it's easy to explain, I would argue, but it's really, really difficult for companies to do that because they seem to stumble when it comes to focusing on their customer.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've heard the story of how at least at Amazon, Jeff Bezos will have an empty chair at all the meetings he goes to because he wants to point to it to remind everybody that's the customer. And it tends to, I read that it focuses the conversation on, yeah, we're all focused on our company and running it, but what about her?
Right.
She doesn't
That's
care.
That's so great. He's such a smart guy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So in the book, you talk about why companies should incorporate free as a tactic, but not as a strategy. What do you mean by that?
You know, I worked on a project several years ago, a consulting project, where the company said, we are getting so much pressure from our investors to offer our product for free. They say, free is the future. You know, you need to give it away to build your market and get your turf. And, you know, they asked me, they said, you know, can you please look at every possible way that we could incorporate free into our business model and let us know if there's any place where it makes sense? And in that case, this company was a small business online accounting product. And there actually was no way that made sense for them to give anything away. They had companies who were willing to pay them already. They had a really nice business. We learned that it wasn't going to help them with acquisition because the barrier to entry wasn't the cost of the service. It was the setup. So what was stopping people was entering all their data, not paying whatever it was, you know, $19.99 a month. And we also learned that free members weren't going to bring in other members. That wasn't viral. There was no networked effect. And so we came back and we said, don't do it. And too many companies just tried it in court. Like, that's their strategy. We're going to give it away and then we're going to make it up in volume. And that's just not good strategy. What is good, though, is, and what I encourage every company to think about, is, does it make sense to offer something for free somewhere in your business model as a means of building awareness, gaining trial, or creating a networked effect or bringing in other members? And it's amazing how many organizations find, when they think about that and look at that, that there are opportunities they hadn't even considered.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like the whole concept of the book requires a little bit of rewiring of the marketing brain.
Yeah, absolutely. It's what you're talking about in terms of focusing on the customer. And it's really about focusing on the long-term relationship with that customer.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned in the book that the principles in it are most helpful at moments when things are actually not fine.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Well, when things are fine, people are reluctant to make changes. When things are fine, people generally go with business as usual and don't try new things or explore other options. And the times, you know, I'm a consultant, you know, that happens to have written a book. And the times that I get called are when things aren't fine. When they say, hey, we have a major new competitor in our space. Or, hey, we know we want to have a subscription business, but we have a, you know, we have a leaky bucket and we're losing the customers as fast as they're coming in and we're not sure why. So really, it's at those, you know, those points of inflection where something's going wrong and the organization isn't happy with their metrics, that there's an opportunity to make change. And really, for going concerns, moving to the membership economy does require some pretty big change. And I talk about in the book a couple of very brave companies that have really made major changes to fully engage in the membership economy.
But they had to.
They had to. I mean, it's interesting. So Weight Watchers went from offline, you know, they've always had a membership model, but they went from offline to online. And you would say, yeah, they had to. But they didn't wait until all the competitors had frothed around them. They were pretty proactive. Mm-hmm. With Adobe and Intuit, who are two companies that have gone from an ownership model where you buy boxed software from them to a membership model where you download the software or access it online, and then you get constant updates of that software so that you're always current. They made a decision strategically that was the future of software, and that ultimately for the majority of their current customers, it was going to be a better experience. And for the future customers, it was definitely going to be the kind of experience that they wanted. The hard thing about making that kind of change, of course, is that their existing members, there was a subset of existing customers that weren't going to be better off or that didn't see that they were going to be better off. And that group is often the most vocal group. Mm-hmm. So that's when things really aren't fine, when you're trying to make a change and some of your customers think things are fine, but you see that they're not going to be fine in the near future.
Yeah, when we talk about waiting too late, it brings to mind the Seth Godin quote about if you wait until there's a case study in your vertical, you're going to be too late.
Right.
So what other risks are there to companies that just ignore this notion of membership?
The risk is someone's going to disrupt their industry. And we've seen it happen in so many different places. And we've seen organizations that seem blindsided. I mean, I'm just surprised that they're blindsided by it. I mean, it's happened in software, as I mentioned, you know, and companies like Adobe and Intuit have been actually pretty good at keeping up. We've seen it in music. You know, people, you know, who do you know that buys records or buys CDs anymore, right? We all use Pandora and Spotify and Amazon, you know, there's all different sources of streamed music that you access through a membership model. We're seeing it with Uber taking the place of taxis and even, you know, in some cases, rental cars. You don't need a rental car anymore if you know you can Uber your way around your destination. We're seeing it with hotels. It's going to, you know, what I would say to your listeners is it's going to happen to you. And You know, I took a class a long time ago from Andy Grove from Intel. Wow. And, his motto is only the paranoid survive.
That's a great book title. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great book for people to read. It's an oldie, but a goodie. Uh-huh. But he says, you know, when you're the dominant industry player, you should be very afraid because mm-hmm. everybody's got you in their sights. And in this case, the membership economy's got you in their sights. And, somebody is going to think of a way to provide your members with access instead of the burden of ownership. They're going to add an element of community to the experience, and they're going to leverage technology to connect with the users in a much more personal way, you know, really using technology as the infrastructure to extend the range of trust.
Mm-hmm. I think that a lot of these companies, if they just need a visual, just look at the dusty stack of CDs that they have on the shelf at their house. And that could be, that could be an example of where they might be going, whatever business they're in. So before we wrap up, let me ask you a few other marketing book questions.
Yeah.
Are there any marketing books you've read recently that you recommend?
Yeah, I have a couple.
Oh, great.
One of them is Everybody Writes by Ann Handley.
Yes.
Over at Marketing Profs. Mm-hmm. I just think content marketing is critical. And if you can write in a voice that engages people, if you can write like you talk, you know, you just have such a big advantage. And really now, you know, everybody in business and in the nonprofit sector needs to be able to communicate with the written word. So that's a great one. A second one is Michael Wu's book, The Science of Social, which is all he works at Lithium, which is, you know, the company that has the platform for online communities. And he does he's a scientist. He's like a PhD brainiac, and he's done a lot of work in what makes online communities work, what makes social work, how does social work, what's the science of it. So those are the two that I would recommend.
Yeah, I've read the first one, but not the second one. I'm going to have to dig into that. Ann Handley was actually a guest on the show, and I'm just so impressed that anyone who can write a book about writing.
Right.
Plus, it's
like
such
very
a,
meta.
It's a, yes, right. And plus, it was just at least I found it to be a very funny book too. I found it very entertaining, much more than you would expect from a book about writing. Are there any marketing books on your upcoming reading list?
Yeah. So Hooked by Nir Eyal. Mm. And then I have to say this, my friend Linda Popke, her book came out yesterday and it's called Marketing Above the Noise. She's a marketer. She's been, you know, on the agency side and the customer side, and she's been a consultant, and she's also a concert pianist. And so she uses the metaphor of, you know, getting your melody heard above all the noise to talk about the importance of strategy in marketing. So those are my recommendations.
Wow. This is why I host a podcast about marketing books. I did not know about that one. The second one, that sounds very interesting. They both sound great. What marketing blogs do you enjoy following to try to keep up with what's going on?
So I like Seth Godin's Try This blog. I work with a lot of technology companies. So I like the HubSpot blog. Because it's talking about applications of technology to get closer to the customer. And so that's important for me to stay close to my customers. Mm-hmm. One that I just found that I really like is David Raab. It's Raab. He has one called The Customer Experience Matrix. And it's all about what I think of as a pretty dry subject, which is, what kinds of marketing technologies a company should have. And sort of the future of predictive analytics and, you know, all the data management tools. Mm-hmm. But he's really he's really funny and clever and sort of has a very personal style. But at the same time, he's digging into the meat of all the different vendors. So for me, that's both, you know, useful and palatable.
This episode is going to have some of the best show notes. I look forward to digging into about half the things you've mentioned I was not familiar with.
Oh, good. Glad.
So how can listeners best find out more about you and your book?
So to find out about my book, they can come to my website, www.membershipeconomy.com. And there's, you know, all kinds of stuff there. There's a downloadable chapter. There's links to some cool stuff. And then they can also go to my consulting site, which is peninsulastrategies.com, where there's lots of writing and blogs and all of that.
Okay, we'll make sure to link up both of those in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. Robbie, thank you very much for being on the Marketing Book Podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Douglas. This was really fun. I enjoyed talking to you.
Well, that closes the book on another episode of the Marketing Book Podcast. Links to everything mentioned are in the show notes at marketingbookpodcast.com. And while you're there, make sure to subscribe to the podcast newsletter to get notified of every new episode, its show notes, links, and other good things. Also, at marketingbookpodcast.com, there are about 20 free marketing ebooks on a wide variety of topics that you'll find helpful. And if you'd like to win a copy of the book we just discussed, leave a review on iTunes and then go to marketingbookpodcast.com, click on the Contact Podcast button, leave me a message and tell me which review is yours and your mailing address. Finally, I love hearing from you, the listener. I really do. Do you have a suggestion for a marketing book for the show? Or maybe I'm just doing something wrong? Let me know. I crave feedback more than praise. Thanks again for listening to the Marketing Book Podcast. Till next time.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.